The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is Nicole DeJacmo from Quirk Books, and I'm here tonight to introduce you to Andrew Schaefer. Crockett and Tubbs, Murtaugh and Riggs, Tango and Cash, Obama and Biden. And Hope Never Dies, this time it's personal, as the former president and vice president are on the case in this high-stakes thriller mystery from Andrew Schaefer, the New York Times bestselling author of 50 Shades of Earl Grey and other fiction and nonfiction titles, when Biden, fresh into retirement, finds that his favorite railroad conductor has died in a suspicious accident he calls the only man he ever fully trusted, the 44th president of the United States. From biker bars and flea bag motels to the heart of the opioid epidemic, these two rebels will risk everything to see just how far down the Delaware rabbit hole this thing goes. Here to tell us more, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Andrew Schaefer to the Free Library.
Thank you. Oh, this is working. All right. I've never talked this loud over an auditorium before, so if I just start going like nuts and just... What we were talking about backstage, I was just talking to Nicole, and she said, and I said, did you see those pictures of Biden and Obama getting back together? Did anyone see that? Well, if it's all over Twitter right now. I know you're all on Twitter, right? Oh yeah. Okay. The resounding oh yeah from the crowd. What happened was they were at a sandwich shop today in D.C. and they ordered sandwiches together, and it was so touching. And Nicole said, "Well, what do you think they were doing?" And I said, "Well, of course I know what they were doing, because it's in my next book, but." You're not going to be able to find that out until next summer. It's called Hope Rides Again. So there's a teaser for you if you want to know what's going to happen there. But I want to thank the Free Library here for having me. It's pretty exciting here to be in Philadelphia. It's my first time in Philadelphia, actually. So I've been going around doing all the Philadelphia things. I saw the bell with the crack. It's cracked, not been fixed yet. There was a man just over beside it in the park urinating. I love it. It's all of it. Philadelphia is great so far. I wanted to see the Rocky statue and do a couple laps up and down the steps because. I've just been exercising for the past 2 days in the hotel. And the hotel workout rooms are some of the worst places you could be. It's just I don't wanna dwell on the depressing stuff here, but I do have to say that this little book tour I'm doing right now for anybody know the name of the book? Hope Never Dies, an Obama-Biden mystery. Thank you for pulling it out. Thank you. I can read it. So that's the book that I'm touring for. However, what I'm here today for is also to do a public apology for Donald Trump. So what happened was a couple of years ago, in 2016, I know you'll have to sort of go back in your mind quite a ways to get there, but it was a very different world, and I wrote a book called The Day of the Donald, Trump Trumps America. And this was in spring of 2016, when Donald Trump was just a candidate for the Republican... No one's laughing right now. You're not supposed to be. That's good. where Donald Trump was just a candidate in a large Republican field that also featured one of the Bushes and the Zodiac Killer, and I forget who else at this point, but it was, nobody expected Donald Trump to win. So I wrote this book, and it was a satire of this insane world where a reality television show host becomes president of the United States of America. Nobody thought this would happen. I had one friend that I knew that was going to be voting for him, and he said he'd do it because, quote, Donald Trump is punk rock. Sorry, he said Donald Trump is punk rock. And I said, oh, so you want him in charge of the government? There's a difference between punk rock music and people in charge of the government. I don't know if I'd trust most punk rock artists to make a sandwich for me at Subway. So I was like, he's kind of out there. I didn't believe this guy was, you know, really going to make it. I wrote this book, Day of the Donald. It came out, and nobody wanted to read the damn thing. What happened was that anybody who was sort of the left liberal persuasion looked at Donald Trump on the cover and said, that looks really thin, and it's a very flattering picture of him. So I'm not sure about that. And they also said, I'm going to pick up if I start reading that book, what's going to happen is I'm going to jinx this whole election. And I said, there's no way we're going to jinx the election, you guys. My therapist was like, tell me it won't happen. So once a month I was paying $100 to go talk to my therapist about her belief that my delusional beliefs in my fiction were going to become true. That's not something that I needed to spend money on, so I don't go to her anymore. That's also because I'm also embarrassed because I was wrong. I was wrong, so I apologize. And so this is sort of a public apology. If you read my book, I'll see how much cash I have on me later. I have about $22 in cash, so I can refund one of you probably the purchase price of the book, and the other one gets probably some more flags here. So that was a really weird book to write. And then someone said, well, did anybody on the right side of the political spectrum read it? And I said, no, there were no pictures in it. I apologize to any children out there who read picture books. That was not directed at you. So it was a fun book to work on. It was a fun book to write, and I wanted to write something else that was political, but we were living in such a divided sort of world, I realized, that it was divided between the left and the right. It wasn't this sort of there was really no middle that I could see. And that seemed to be very different than the world we were living in just a few months earlier before the election. But what I decided to do was I said, the next book I write, if it comes true, I want it to be awesome. I want it to kick ass. And so I said, you know what? I want Joe Biden and Barack Obama back together again, solving crimes. Because everybody knows there's no better way to reconnect with someone from your past than solve a crime together. So it was a week after they were out of office. Those memes were going around on the internet where Joe Biden was up to some crazy shenanigans in the Oval Office, and then Barack Obama would be like, Joe, you can't do that, Joe. And so that was going around, and I sent an email to my agent, and I said, okay, here we go. Barack Obama, Joe Biden, cozy mystery set at the Iowa State Fair. Now, if you've read the book, you know that it's not set at the Iowa State Fair. Now, I am from Iowa, and I thought everybody knew about the Iowa State Fair. I mean, all the candidates have to go through there to it. Has anybody here been to the Iowa State Fair before? Well, have you been to just a state fair? Most of you have? You ain't been to shit, okay? The Iowa State Fair has, not only do we have deep fried butter on a stick, which is a stick of butter that is frozen, then coated, deep fried in the batter. Not only do we have that, we also have the giant life-size butter cow, which is one of the marvels. It's right up there with y'all's bell out there, okay? I would put it right up there. We always have a cow that's a life-size butter cow in a refrigerated tent. Then we also have like a person that's also a butter person. It's not a real person covered in butter. It's a butter sculpture, just to clarify that. And so one year we had Abraham Lincoln. We also had William Shatner, because James T. Kirk is from Riverside, Iowa. So Iowa connection. And then one year we had, which is my favorite, which was the butter Kevin Costner. Mmm. So delicious. That was because, of course, Field of Dreams. If you sculpt it, he will come. He did not come to the event, to the Iowa State Fair, unfortunately. You know, we're still waiting, though. We're very patient. It's probably melted down to, you know, the size of a little tiny Kevin Costner now, but it's probably still there. That was my original idea, was to set it at this Iowa State Fair, and I was like, what if there was a dead body inside the butter sculpture? And my agent and my editor said, that's really stupid, but we think you have something here, and what if it was personal to one of the people in the story, not to you, Andrew? I said, well, that's just weird. I write for myself. But we ended up setting the story in Wilmington, Delaware, which I guess is a little ways from here. It's like 20 minutes, or during rush hour, it's... Yeah, you get... I'm from the Midwest and also from Kentucky, and when we say something is 20 minutes away, it means it's 20 miles away. And out here, I've been sort of driving around Washington, D.C., Maryland, Delaware, and now Philadelphia. So when you say, oh, something's 20 minutes or 3 hours away, I'm starting to come to the realization that I know that my phone doesn't know anything. Like, I'm like, I thought the phone was supposed to know how far stuff was. You're like, no, don't trust the phone. So we decided to set it in Delaware, Wilmington, Delaware, and again, it's a really fun book. There is a murder of an Amtrak conductor. I mean, it doesn't sound fun, and I would say it's sort of like an Elmore Leonard type book, Donald Westlake, some sort of mysteries or thrillers that run in that sort of humorous vein. Maybe Quentin Tarantino a little bit. There was one point where I was writing the rough draft and it got a little bit too Tarantino-esque, and they were in the basement of a pawn store, and I said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! I think I've seen this one before." It's a fun book though, but it's really about two guys who are out of office. They don't know what's happening anymore. 6 months have gone by. Joe Biden's sitting at home, not doing much, and Barack Obama is going out on the vacation to end all vacations. He's going skydiving with Richard Branson, windsurfing with Bradley Cooper. There's actually a number of fake things I put in my book, but right now I can't even remember which ones are real or fake. The real Obama and the fake Obama are sort of merging in my mind here. But he went on that long vacation, and most people were like, well, where's Michelle and the kids? And I was like, well, where's Joe? Where's Joe? And so the book is sort of my fantasy about where Joe was. He was at home watching his best friend go around the world, auditioning for a new best friend, which is very painful to watch. And then there's this the murder mystery that brings them together. And so what we have is it's sort of like a love story then, almost like Lethal Weapon. It's very touching
And everybody at my publisher cried. Some people from the publisher are here. It's from Quirk Books from Philadelphia. That's everybody in this room here, for those of you listening to the audio podcast. It turned out to be like a really touching book. It was supposed to just be like a hilarious parody at first. It was, they were jumping out of helicopters and everything. And we said, no, let's tone it down. Let's make it a little bit more emotional. And I said, ooh, I don't know, that kind of scares me. Emotion, guys, emotions. And it was like, no, let's open our hearts up and see what happens. And it really turned into sort of a touching story, plus murder. So there's really a little bit of both, but it's a fun story, and I've been thinking about it for a number of years. The first time I saw Joe with his aviator shades on, I thought, that guy looks like an action hero. And then he opens his mouth, sticks his foot in it, and you go, okay, he's more like Leslie Nielsen than James Bond. But together with Barack Obama, they make a really good crime-fighting couple, or president and vice president, I guess. They're almost like Sherlock and Watson. So Barack's sort of the cerebral Sherlock. He's got all the answers. Meanwhile, the book is narrated by Joe, who's this Watson-like character, who is very down-to-earth and just sort of a man of the people, like Joe is. So what I'm going to do now is read a little scene from the book. And this scene is actually not in the book, so I just lied to you. So I apologize again. I'm just going to be apologizing for a while. So it's not in the book, but it does take place in Delaware on Rehoboth Beach. Where Joe has a lake house, apparently. Or, sorry, not a lake. Well, I guess it's an ocean, right? It's a beach house. Okay, yeah, that's right. Again, I'm from Kentucky. I'm just like, y'all got stuff out here, like traffic and water. So this scene actually takes place on Rehoboth Beach. To the best of my knowledge, Joe's house does not back up directly to the beach. I don't really know. I was in Rehoboth Beach the other day. I wasn't like walking around it or anything. So don't think that was happening. So anyway, he wasn't home. So again, this takes place on the beach, and in the story, they've just been on the trail of a killer. They have to hide out for the night. They decide to go to Joe's beach house. And in the book, they actually go to a motel. But here in this alternate reality, in this room tonight only, they go to a beach house. When I woke, Barack was already on the beach, walking barefoot in the sand and watching the sunrise. I donned my robe and climbed the porch steps down to join him. Barack had changed from his navy suit into a pair of khaki shorts and a slim black polo, the armholes of which were stretched out by his biceps. Unlike your Uncle Joe, the former president had been working out. Good news was that nobody else this far north on the beach had yet given us a second look. We were just a couple of old beach bums kicking up sand at 7 in the morning. Nobody knew we'd escaped Barack's Secret Service detail. Nobody knew we were on the trail of a killer. I have an extra pair of Speedos inside if you want to take a dip, I told him. Joe, you don't have Speedos. I do, I swear to you on my Irish mother's grave. Barack narrowed his eyes at me. Watch your step. Watch my what? He pulled me to the side just out of a patch of a neon blue... of the path of a neon blue man of war. It was dead, but the tentacles could still sting. The Portuguese jellyfish had washed up on the beach by the hundreds. It wasn't a common occurrence on the Delaware coast. Once every 10 years or so, I wanted it to be a sign, a premonition, but I'd never believed in premonitions. "You're not thinking about swimming," I said, studying the deep creases in Brock's face. "You're still thinking about the clue we found in that motel room. I can see it behind your eyes. I've got some ideas. Are you going to share them with me?" "Maybe." I shook my head. Unbelievable. It was like we were back in the White House. I'd been in government longer than Barack had been. I'd been chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee before he could even walk. But as Barack liked to say, only one of us knows what happened in Roswell, Joe. "So how's your Secret Service guy taking things?" I asked. "Well, Steve's taking things pretty well, considering he lost the 44th President of the United States." "And the 47th Vice President," I said. Barack gave me some side eye for that, and did point out the obvious. I hadn't been under protection for weeks now. There'd never been an attack on a former Vice President. We were forgotten by everyone, including the whack jobs. "Well, he hasn't reported it to anyone yet, has he?" I said. "Well," Barack said, "if he had, there'd been a knock at the door at 3 a.m, a loud knock, but that hadn't happened." Whether he was talking about the Secret Service or Michelle, I didn't know, but I got the point. Steve wasn't going to let anyone know the president was missing, not if he wanted to keep his job. "So that's why he hasn't tracked our cell phones," I said. "If he does, a red flag goes up in the system." Barack stopped. "Actually, you have your cell phone, Joe?" I dug it out of my robe. I just picked up the Samsung last month and was carrying it everywhere like a kid with a new bag of marbles. "Feel how lightweight that is," I said. "It's the size of a TV screen, practically." Barack weighed it in his hand. "It's nice, Joe. Is it waterproof?" "That's what the guy at the Verizon store said." Barack hurled it into the sea. He had a good arm. It plunked down about 40 yards from shore. Waves crashed over the spot where it had gone in, and I couldn't have picked the spot out if he paid me. I stared into the sea, dumbfounded. Was that necessary? "Well, when Steve does pinpoint it, he'll be led straight into the Atlantic Ocean. It'll buy us a few hours, Joe. Don't worry, your insurance will cover it." I didn't get insurance. "Well, whose fault was that?" "Where's your phone?" I said. "Give me your phone." "Well, it's just a burner, Joe. You can't be traced. I don't care. Give it to me." Barack handed me a generic phone that couldn't have cost him $30 at a gas station. When was the last time this guy had been to a gas station? I cranked my arm back and let it go. It splashed down about 5 feet away. I'd spiked it like an amateur, like an idiot. "Dang it," I muttered, splashing into the knee-high water. "Joe, we don't have time for this." I bent my hand over and searched the floor for it. I would throw it again, farther than Barack had thrown his, that was for darn sure. What malarkey. I'd been the football player in high school, not Barack. I was going to show him what kind of arm old Uncle Joe still had. I was going to show him. Ah! The pain from the jellyfish sting was immediate and blinding. It shot up my right arm and straight into my skull. I thrashed around in the water, swinging my arm wildly with the Portuguese man-of-war attached, its tentacles wrapped around my hand like tape around a boxer's gloves. "Hold still, Joe," he shouted. "Code names," I yelled. "Use our code names." Barack stared at me like I had a damn jellyfish on my hand. "Code names? Our Secret Service names, your
Renegade."
"And I'm Celtic," I said. I thrust my hand underwater and held it there.
"What are you doing? Let me help."
"I'm trying to drown him," I said.
"It's jellyfish. They live underwater, Joe." He paused. "I mean, Celtic."
Barack Obama was right. Barack Obama was always right. He had a stick in his hand, a piece of driftwood. He slid the tip underneath the jellyfish, and with a quick flip of the wrist, he sent the creature sailing. I stared at my swollen hand in horror. "What do we do now?" I said. "Do I have to suck the venom out?"
"It's not a rattlesnake bite. We just need to get you some vinegar. Then we'll return to Wilmington. Then we'll find the killer."
"Vinegar? Where'd you learn so much about jellyfish?"
Hawaii, Joe.
We waded back to the shoreline. I watched my step, wary of another sneak attack from the Atlantic Ocean. I was also wary of another sneak attack from Barack Obama.
In some ways, his repeated betrayals stung worse than the jellyfish's barbs. Pretty soon, though, this would all be over, and then we'd be free not to speak to each other ever again. We'd work together to find my friend's killer, and that would be it. The end of an era. The end of our bromance. Thank you. All right, we have time for a few questions here, and we have people wandering the aisles with microphones.
Have you heard from Joe Biden or Barack Obama?
Have I heard from them? That's a good question. No, I haven't. I don't know if we sent them copies of our book, because, I mean, hey, we want their $15 too. But back in December, I actually went to see Joe Biden on his book tour. He was doing a book tour for his latest book, Promise Me Dad, which is a great memoir that you should check out. And I went there to see him in Asheville, North Carolina, which is a lovely tourist town. Has anybody been there? It's so laid back, isn't it? It's beautiful, it's laid back, it's awesome. And so when I got there, I thought, you know what, I'm going to be a little laid back myself. I'm going to wear a t-shirt that has a penguin eating an ice cream cone on it. Because I saw it and I said, that's cute. I think Joe's going to get a kick out of this. And I go, everybody else here is pretty laid back. So I, you know, put that on over some jeans and went to this book signing. Now, it was not as laid back as I thought it would be. Everybody there was dressed up like they were out for a night in the town or for prom or something. And I was the only person there in a t-shirt to, you know, I guess I had paid $300 and if to meet him and shake his hand. And if you do something like that for $300, you don't wear a t-shirt to meet them. I've been to a lot of rock meet and greets, you know. I've been Slipknot. I mean, you know, you don't dress up for that, right? Maybe with a mask or something you do. So I went there and everybody was dressed up and I was like, oh, I'm not going to say anything about the book now because I was going to say, oh, I wrote a book about you, Joe, which is kind of weird, but not the weirdest thing I've probably ever said to a celebrity. So I went there and waiting in line and the people in front of me had a medal that they had got, their son had gotten in the war. He was killed in the war. And they handed this to Joe, and it was a very emotional moment right in front of me. And everybody was very emotional and in tears. And Joe is just very genuine, and if he feels emotion, he feels the emotion. And they had their little moment, and then they got their picture and went away, and then Joe turned to me, and he's like, and at first I was thinking like, oh no, he's going to think like, who's this asshole in this cartoon penguin shirt, because that's what I was thinking, and I know that's what like his security guys were thinking. They're like, oh my God. And so he took one look at me though, and this big smile spread on his face, and he goes, ice cream, that's my favorite. So that's who Joe is. He's just a very genuine, emotional guy, and he just pivoted very quickly, like a politician has to do, from one emotion to the other, and it wasn't awkward at all. But, you know, I couldn't say anything to him anyway if I wanted to, because he smiles at you. There's a cardboard stand-up when you come through the door out there you can take your picture with, but when he smiles at you, those teeth, they're just so, it's like a, It's almost like a tractor beam in like Star Trek or something that just pulls you right in, and I just kind of floated off of my toes towards him, and he's just smiling and shakes his hand, and they give him your name so that he greets you by name. I mean, this guy is good. And they give you your name, and so we take our picture, and then he slaps me on his back and puts his hand on my shoulder, and he whispers to me, thanks for making the effort, Andrew. I still don't know exactly what he meant by that.
I think he was saying, hey, thanks for making the effort to come out. I know it looks like you don't have a lot of cash to spend on something like this. It all goes to charity, boy. It's good. Because it did go to his charitable foundation. But I still don't know exactly what he meant by that. Or if he was just being sarcastic, like, thanks for making the effort, dickhead. Joe has a filthy mouth, actually. You may have heard him on some overheard on some hot mics before, and I didn't do that in the book because it kind of broke the realism of the book, because every time you see Joe, he's using some word like malarkey or some other hokey old saying like that. I mean, I think I go so far as to have him say "son of a buttermilk biscuit" in the book. So he's a lot more sort of homey in the book than he is in real life. But yeah, he's not going to swear in there. He's Joe.
This is kind of related to what you were just talking about, but when I read it, I felt like you really did a good job of capturing Joe's voice, and I wondered, was that something you had to consciously work to do, or did it come naturally to you? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so the question is, did I have to consciously think about Joe's voice? I really did, because it's half sort of Joe Biden, and then a folksy version of Joe Biden, and then it's also half noir narrator. So it gets very dark, and there are these very dark pauses where, you know, he just says stuff like, "I don't believe in premonitions." Like, just this thing where you're like, that's so loaded with meaning, but it's just cliched. I got this review yesterday. I'm not going to say the publication, because I don't want to give them any press for their totally awful review of my book. It actually said Schaefer hits every cliche in the noir genre, and I was like, yes, I did it. Ugh. So that's what I was consciously trying to do. So I'm not going to apologize for that. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to try to come up with that voice. But it was a lot of back and forth with my editor Jason, and it was trying to get that tone right. I tried for a while to do alternating chapters, like a romance novel, where you'd have one Barack and one Joe and back and forth. But it's impossible to get inside Barack Obama's head. There's so much going up there that the second you get in there, you sort of demystify it. And you go, oh, well, I didn't really want to know what he was thinking, and I didn't want to know all this stuff about him. So he kind of floats in and out of the book, and he's not on every page. There's actually parts of the book where he disappears, sort of like Batman. That was my sort of, I was like, he's a little bit of Sherlock Holmes, and he's a little bit Batman. So, you know, Joe will be talking, and then all of a sudden he'll turn around and be like, where'd he go? Where'd he go? Where'd he go? And so he's gone. So that was sort of my model, and it was a lot of fun to try to get... But you don't want to get into his head. It's like the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. So, like, Pirates 1 through 4 were fine with Captain Jack Sparrow as, like, a supporting character. But then once Jack Sparrow became, like, the lead character, you go, oh, this is not... I don't want to know that much about Jack Sparrow. Or maybe you do. I've never seen the movies. That's just what I... I have to admit I've never seen them. So maybe you do want to know a lot about them.
Well, you clearly enjoy being a comedian. Do you speak the dialogue before you write it? Like, do you have a whole dialogue with yourself before you put it in print?
Do I speak any of the dialogue first? I actually don't, because I hear it in my head in their voices, in Joe's and Barack's voices, so I don't speak it out loud, because I'm a really, really bad, you know, imitator of that. It all goes on up there and... in my head. The fun thing was, a couple nights ago in New York, we had an Obama impressionist from the Jimmy Fallon show, Dion Flynn, and he was there. And he's not here tonight because he's expensive. he's totally worth the money. If you know, the market right now for Obama impersonators is booming.
is booming. People want the more. He's been called to do appearances at people's deathbeds. And he said that one woman said, "I didn't. I got to tell you, be honest with you. I didn't vote for you either time." Because in her head, she thinks this is Barack Obama. And then she goes, "But I'm glad you're here now." And I was like, wow, I would pay this guy to walk around with me everywhere if I could, though. But yeah, people really need sort of that comfort right now of very stable geniuses like Barack Obama and Joe Biden. But none of that was related to your question, was it? A little bit. Yeah, no, so I don't really get into their head, but hearing someone else read it, and this guy was like spot on as Obama, I was like, wow, that's good. That's exactly what I imagined. So, thank you.
How did you get into this business? I mean, what's your, like, history?
Where do you want to start? I mean, how far back, how much time do we have to go? The everybody's route as a writer is just very different. So I started off writing. Actually, I mean, I've been writing my whole life, but I started off writing greeting cards. And my greeting cards, they were humorous greeting cards. They were called Atheist Christmas Cards. And they were on like the Stephen Colbert Report did a report on them. And also another place did a report. They were called Fox News. And so I got a lot of positive comments and feedback on those. But out of that experience of having these cards sort of make the news, I got like a book deal to do a book based on my cards. And it was a book about philosophers and their love lives, which was based on another set of cards I had for Valentine's Day. Philosophers don't have anything good to say about Valentine's Day. I think Nietzsche said, "Ah, women, they make the highs higher and the lows more frequent." So it was a very tongue-in-cheek, dark book, and it was a lot of fun to write. And so since then, I've just been working on different books. I worked on one book called How to Survive a Sharknado, which is which has real-life survival advice in there. And I've worked in just a number of different books, but this was the first book that I actually wrote that I felt that was really the type of book that I read a lot, which is humorous mysteries. And it's the first book that's, people say, well, it's about these two politicians, and I go, but there's a lot of heart in there, and there's a lot of myself in there. Like, I give Joe my bum knee in the book. Joe's actually in a lot better, probably, health than I am. he's the healthiest 75-year-old in the world, and he'll be the first to tell you that. So I had to hobble him in the book with a bum knee to give the villains a little bit of room, you know, to make an escape. So it was, yeah, but this is the first sort of book that I've written, and I'm really excited to be working on the second book with Quirk Books right now. So Quirk Books, oh my gosh, there's another... A lot of class.
So, is this the start of a whole series of Obama-Biden mysteries?
Well, is it the start of a whole series? Right now I have the second book mapped out, and I'm working on it right now. It's going on in my head, and that's called Hope Rides Again, and so that comes out next summer. It's set in Chicago. This time instead of Wilmington, and Chicago's a city I love, and it's also a chance for me to get. I'm a Chicago Cubs fan, so there'll probably be a lot of digs at the White Sox in there, I guess. I usually put a lot of stuff into my books. They're just vehicles for my digs at other sports teams. You didn't read Day of the Donald, probably. And if you didn't read it, you don't have to. Don't pick it up, whatever. But it was my satire. I had the vice president in that book was Tom Brady, who's, I know, really, probably a hugely popular figure in this town. And I shot him into space in the book. He was supposed to go on a moon mission for Donald Trump. But, of course, he missed it, and he kept going...
and going, and he's still up there right now. So I do have a lot of fun writing the books, and I hope that, you know, that it can continue either as a series or you never know, you know, where it goes from there, because you don't know what Joe's going to do next year. He says he's going to make up his mind whether he's going to run in 2020 by January, and I'm like, he's cutting it kind of close there, but I feel that if he knew in his heart what he was going to do, he would accidentally let it slip out. He's not out there with some big plan. He's like, oh, they're never going to guess what I'm going to do. No, he didn't do this the first time. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to do it now. So, you know, so I don't know if it will, you know, if it continues on past next year with President Joe Biden and Vice President Barack Obama. You know, so I'm not really sure where it goes from there, but I certainly hope to write more books like that or more books in that vein. So, but thank you very much for coming out here tonight.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.